this is the National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History. Two, the date is still July 22, 1996. Thank you. I'm Gabrielle Denman, interviewing Rabbi Walter Jacob. Mary is the recorder. Mary Harrison's the recorder. And this is tape two. And I want you to tell us, please, Rabbi, your mother's name.
Her name was Annette Friederike Jacob. And her maiden name was Lodenberg.
And your brother's name?
Herbert Jacob.
Okay, now I'm going to wait a minute. Okay.
Okay, you asked about my mother's name. What might be of interest to you, and I can provide that, she recorded sometime in the 1940s her memories of his daughter.
That would be interesting.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, not on tape, it's on
paper. Well, we also put collateral material in your envelope. Good. Okay, now can you explain to us very briefly this Torah wrapper?
Yes.
I've never heard of that.
Well, we have a couple of them in our collection downstairs. I suppose it may originally have been just a very long linen piece which was used to hold the Torah together so that it wouldn't move when it was put away. And after a while, that became decorated. And it's decorated with the verses, aside from the name of the person and the name of the parents and the city, with the traditional blessing that is said when a child is circumcised. May this child have a long life, be useful to the community, and have a good marriage.
Okay, thank you. And each child, each boy child, received one. When he was born.
Yes, that was made for every child, and in a sense that provided a birth register, although it wasn't intended as that.
That's very interesting.
And that would then have been used at various occasions in that child's life. A bar mitzvah, before a wedding, some other special occasion. They would dig that out of whatever system they had.
Just boys or girls as well?
My dear, this is the 1930s, so it was just boys. And by the way, I do remember also seeing the synagogue, as it happens, earlier in the evening of Kristallnacht, because I was in the building at that point, and as a rabbi's child felt at home and opened the door of the synagogue just to have a look inside. Accident event. We were there for some sort of a class function as a part of the school.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that your parents got the New York Times. You did say they had English, but was it that good?
Oh, yes.
It really was.
Yeah, they spoke English rather fluently. I mean, accented, of course.
Yeah.
But my father had been to England to a conference once in the 20s, and they had both taken English in school, and French, of course Latin, Greek, my father. My grandfather, all his life, not all his life, but most of his life, corresponded with a friend of his in Latin.
Did he know?
Just to keep it up.
Oh. Now, did they get the New York Times because they knew they were emigrating, or was this just...
As a preparation for immigration.
Right, okay.
Yes, to improve their English.
Now, one more question before we go on. The Mr. Spok...
Spokojny.
Can you spell that for Mary?
S-P-O-K-O-J-N-Y.
Okay, and is he the president of the congregation?
Yes.
Do they have a rabbi?
No.
They do not. So they take turns doing the service, or how do they do it?
Various people lead the service, and sometimes somebody will say something, and I have to say that also, the fact that happens in that way gave me courage, because when I returned to Germany to give the dedication speech, I did something I never do here, which is write it out, because I didn't trust my German to be fluent on the spur of the moment. But on that, on the Saturday before that occasion, I attended services and they asked me to say something. And I had no preparation, you know, I was just asked on the spot. And it was easy because before me, the president of the congregation had given a little speechlet. And that speechlet was very nice Yiddish, but it was not German. And so I knew that any mistakes that I might make would not be as major as those that he was making.
Okay. Now, you said that you had another vignette about the congregation in Augsburg when you visited.
There are loads of things, but one that might be important, and that is on that first trip, the woman who had been my children's maid when I was very young sent me a note and said, I know you're here, wish you well, if you want to see me, come and see me, if not, I understand too. So Irene and I decided to go. And we went at a very nice, modest, but very nice apartment where she and her husband lived. He had worked on the railroad and had lost an arm. And their daughter was also there. Well, we came, we had a cup of coffee, and did our best, I did my best, to keep the conversation on rather neutral ground, and not to ask, what did you actually do on the railroad? During the war, where were you, and that sort of thing. But as it turned out, the daughter, who was in her 20s, asked all the embarrassing questions and sort of put her parents on the spot. What did you do, what did you not do in this period?
And you think this might have been the first time that she...
I think so.
Well, she probably had no opportunity.
Yeah, there was no occasion to do that before. But I've seen this sort of change in that generation in many young people, both those that visit here and in Israel, and those I've come across in Germany. And because Irene and I, you know, are fluent in German, we hear whatever's going on around us and understand it, and we pick up the nuances too.
One more question before we go on. How many Jews were there in Augsburg before the war, when you were a child?
There were about 1,800, something like, maybe 2,000, something like that.
And you mentioned there was a suburban synagogue. Were there others as well besides Jews?
No, that was and that suburban synagogue existed because Jews were frequently expelled from Augsburg. So actually, that was not a very old building, but that's a building that went back to the middle of the previous century. Why it survived, I have no idea. It was just an oversight.
And the Jews were expelled. This was before Bismarck, I assume.
Well, the Jewish history in Augsburg goes back maybe to Roman times, but certainly 1,000 years. And they were expelled
often,
many times.
Yeah.
I was told of a location of a previous synagogue in the 1700s in a small building in the heart of the city, but I'm not sure it survived. But there are remnants of that in stonework, where stones from previous synagogues have been used, and you can see bits of Hebrew inscriptions, you know, here and there.
Okay.
Speaking of Warner, what was the population of Augsburg at the time?
About 200,000.
Okay. I think we can go back to Long Island. And we were catching mice.
Yes. Well, the stay there was really very content. I mean, there were lots of things that in retrospect you might say we should have done, but we didn't do them because we didn't have the money for it. The World's Fair was on. We certainly didn't have money for the World's Fair. When we needed a haircut, we looked around high and low for somebody who could do it cheaply. and traveled a long way to get it done more cheaply. I remember having a birthday and being sick in bed with, I've forgotten what, cold or something, and my aunt came and saw that I had a ball or something like that. She said, isn't that nice if they give you a ball because you're sick? I said, no, it's because it's my birthday.
How about your synagogue attendance and your Jewish life?
In Long Island, yeah. We went to a variety of synagogues, conservative and reform. And I remember the first reform congregation rather vividly because we were not asked to wear a kippah. And that was different than German practice, obviously. So that was strange. And then after some time, in the middle of June, 1940, my father found a position, not as a rabbi, he couldn't find one, but as a Hebrew school principal in an Orthodox Hebrew school in St. Joseph, Missouri. So we took a train and went to St. Joseph, and I still remember going through Pittsburgh. It was night, and it was like driving through was on the train, but riding through hell, because there were these fires on both sides of the track, and these huge coke oven steel mills. It was dramatic.
And what year is this?
This is 1940. And then off to, and of course, you know, the other part of London, of New York, that was wonderful, astonishing, was how bright it was, because we had been accustomed to the blackout. You didn't have to carry your gas masks anymore. It was different. St. Joseph was, of course, very different. The Hebrew school was a small affair. We lived on the second floor of an apartment, of a duplex, really, building. What did we do when we arrived? The only thing I remember immediately was getting a library card and using the library frequently, which was not far away. We had relatives in St. Joseph who made us feel at home. Then our lift van came and we unpacked. We began to have our own possessions. It was hot, over 100. We didn't have money for a fan. So my father, out of desperation, when it was extremely hot, sat in the bathtub and full of water. And then we played and started to make friends. And soon we went to school. And went to Hebrew school in the afternoon.
You went to public school?
Went to public school. Went to services, an Orthodox service on Friday night and Shabbat morning, which was also interesting and amusing, because we were accustomed to a disciplined synagogue life of Germany and England, where we'd also gone. Here, this was an American Orthodox synagogue, built in the 1890s probably. In the main synagogue upstairs, they were very large brass spittoons. I don't know if they were still in use for spitting tobacco. Downstairs in the smaller synagogue where the services were on Friday night, they were always meshulachim.
Please tell us what that is.
These are beggars, really, Jewish beggars, who we watched them as they prayed, because they, of course, moved back and forth, shuffled back and forth, and as they moved back and forth, we could see the holes in their socks appearing and disappearing. I'm talking about my brother and myself, who, you know.
Sure.
And but the life in that little city, in the poorer quarter of the city, where the synagogue also was fine. This was the Midwest. if they had heard of Europe, they didn't know much about it. You know, the war was very distant.
Was it culture shock for your parents, who came from this very sophisticated European background?
I'm sure it was, but in St. Joseph, St. Joseph had a large Jewish population, still at that point, probably 3,000 Jews out of a population of 60,000 people. Three congregations, two Hebrew schools. Well, first of all, for whatever culture there was, they didn't have money. I don't know what occurred that was free. We didn't go to anything. In the summer, we went swimming, walked to the swimming pool, which was about a half hour's walk, and were just as hot after we came back, walking another half hour, as we had been before. Started to learn a bit about baseball. And then, of course, we're still in St. Joseph when the Second World War began. And started to do the various things that you did at the beginning of the war, collect scrap tin, paper, other things. And had a lot of very nice friends, some very good teachers who took an interest in us. My brother and me took us on excursions. We didn't have a car, but we were and my father supervised this and did a lot of teaching at this Hebrew school, which must have been both a very unsatisfying and boring job. He also was asked to write for the Universal Jewish Encyclopedia, because he had written some articles for the Encyclopedia Judaica in Germany. And so he did that, and he tried to sell some of the books he had brought over, but that was hard to do from St. Joseph.
Now, when the war started, you were Germans. Was there any discrimination in that regard?
No, they knew we were Jews.
Yeah.
And in fact, kind of funny. The war began for us, my brother and me, in the following fashion. It was Saturday afternoon. Pretty sure it was. We had been school crossing guards. So that meant that once every 3 months, we got free tickets to a second class local movie house with two features. So my parents were listening. The one cultural thing was the Metropolitan Opera Saturday afternoon. So I listened to that. We were not particularly interested. He was interrupted by various messages and began to look a little gloomy. But we went to the movie. And when we came home from the movie, we were at war.
Okay. Now, you were how old at this time? 10.
Now I was 10, and the second summer in St. Joseph, in order not to be, not to waste the summer, I decided to sell ice cream on the street.
I guess that was good business.
Well, it was, well, yes, I think I made $10 in the course of the summer.
Do you have anything that you want to tell us about your great schooling?
The schooling was, I had a lot of friends, and it was a good elementary school. Some problems on the way to school, not because we were Jews, but just the ordinary fights among kids. And the other problem I think that both my brother and I had was this terrible clothing that we had to wear from Germany. Which was a real issue, but there was nothing to be done about that. The school was okay. We learned, and I think I had an advantage in Germany because the school in Germany was a one-room or two-room school, which meant that as a first grader, I was listening to material up to the sixth grade. So that was interesting. We could pick some of that up along the way. What can I say about the school? The teacher who took a special interest in us took us out into the country a little bit. I think it was only me and a couple of other kids. My uncle was also very nice. Two uncles there who take us occasionally to do something for us. We'd go up there with a wagon and load up magazines that they were through, with which they were through, bringing home. There was an excursion. An hour to get there, an hour to get back, a weekend.
How long before you lost your English accent?
I have no idea.
But it was real fast.
Probably.
Yeah. Okay, you probably have very good bar mitzvah preparation.
Well, by that time, my father moved from St. Joseph to Springfield, Missouri.
Yes.
So this happened in 1942. Now he had a position as a rabbi.
Oh, he was? Okay. Tell us about that.
In a small Reform congregation in Springfield, about 100 Jewish families. Nice town. I remember arriving there to see it with my mother and my brother. We were taken around by the president of the congregation. You know, in retrospect, it's also interesting to think about these two individuals. Very nice man, but certainly very different from the, he wasn't exactly a judge, but he was close to a judge in Germany, a much more formal presence of the president of the congregation than this rather informal Midwestern style. We arrived there also in the summer. It was hot. And we found a little house. It was not easy because the war was on. We rented it. And then my father also had, that ended up his major responsibility in the Second World War. There was a large hospital built there. It eventually had 5,000 beds. Enormous hospital, and he was the Jewish chaplain.
Was this a service hospital?
Military hospital, yes. That brought some interesting and strange coincidences. For example, at the time of my bar mitzvah, they also did some training for medical personnel. One of the individuals who was stationed there was a young man who had grown up in Augsburg who was present at my bar mitzvah and subsequently settled in Germany after the war, became a major figure in the German newspaper publishing world, the editor, senior editor of the largest paper in Berlin. Meaning I visited him several times. He's at 75, now 85, I guess. Good health, keeps going.
He was in America.
He was an American soldier.
But he was not Jewish.
He was Jewish.
He was Jewish.
He was part of my father's congregation.
And then what then?
After the war, during the war, he worked for the American newspaper, the American military newspaper, for a while. Then was offered a good position there and stayed. Another incident on the sadder side, that one of the wounded was also a young man from Augsburg, and he died.
So they were all at this military hospital?
Yes, just by coincidence. And there were, of course, hundreds of other soldiers. So that, for example, during the wartime Seders, we rented the largest hall in the city and had a public seder for 300-400 soldiers. And plus whoever had a seder at home invited 10-15 boys. And they were the other thing that I did in the Second World War as a sort of an unofficial assistant was set up for military weddings, because you know, people would show up with their bride, they were going overseas, they wanted to get married, and so while my father took care of the wedding part of it, I would scurry around and get the wine and you know, these things. They were either in the synagogue or at home. I had to find witnesses from the local community to help out.
That's great.
And we were also a little enterprising in the war. A couple of friends, there were a couple of colleges. One was quite close, in which they were military, I guess, air cadets. And we soon discovered, this was after a few years, that these young kids like to drink milk. So we buy a couple of boxes of milk and sell them to these cadets at a 10-cent profit.
Right, well. Okay, do you want to tell us about your bar mitzvah?
My bar mitzvah. I started studying for it in St. Joseph. Because we were in Hebrew school, of course, there, and then finished it up in Springfield. It was, like any rabbinic bar mitzvah, sort of a big congregational affair. Compared to our bar mitzvahs, on a very, very minor note. I mean, we had a little kiddush afterwards. And I do remember getting suits, and then getting lots of presents. And I also remember carrying as many as I could back, because I really wasn't interested in all those items and clothing.
And what did you get instead?
Trying to get books for them. The other thing that was interesting in Springfield, Missouri, and was kind of amusing, well, two things happened there. My parents said that both of us had lost a year in schooling in the transition from Germany. Well, it wasn't quite so, but we'd lost about a half a year. So they asked if we couldn't be moved ahead in Springfield. Well, they weren't too anxious to do that, but finally decided, all right, if they can make it, okay, so we'll put it back. But we both made it without too much difficulty. Partly because the school system was an experimental school system for Columbia University. So they tried all sorts of things, like a core curriculum, which in essence meant you were in one class supposed to cover everything, but in reality meant that the teacher taught what he or she knew and liked and left the rest out. So it wasn't a very successful sort of thing. But as I'd come from Germany and was now, that feeds into your earlier question, an expert on the enemy, I was asked to lecture to classes about my experiences, what had happened to German Jews. And then, of course, some teachers would ask things about which I knew absolutely nothing. You know, what can you tell us, Walter, about the Junkers? What could I tell about the Junkers? I've never heard of the Junkers. Or other such things. And it, in retrospect, it's particularly amusing to think that at age 12, I was wandering around the school lecturing on modern Germany.
Well, now, if this were an experimental school administered by Columbia University, wasn't there any supervision?
Oh, sure.
And they must have had a curriculum.
Of course.
Yeah.
But I've been in this business long enough to know what happens to curriculum.
Okay.
The teacher gets it and puts it in a drawer. And then if you ask after a while, where's the curriculum? They'll say, oh, yeah, let me look for it.
But didn't they have to be accountable after the year, if indeed this is a research project?
Well, yes, but then you saw that it had failed.
I see. Okay. Sounds good.
And it wasn't a complete failure, but it was certainly not a very demanding school system. But you could learn, and I certainly learned a lot in the whole process. And the other thing is that, and we had many discussions on that at home, is that it took a while for my parents to realize that what's important and emphasized in American schools is how to get along.
That's very different.
More than just the academic training.
How about high school?
High school, well, by high school, things had changed in a couple of ways. First of all, my father was teaching at a neighboring college, as well as being a rabbi.
Name of the college?
Drury College. And so the end result was that he was more of a college professor than a rabbi.
What was he teaching?
Started to teach German, then gave that to my mother, who taught German. Found herself in a peculiar position of teaching Christmas carols as the rabbi's wife in the German class.